Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Friday. It's Toy Department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. What's going on, man?
Oh, nothing.
I am.
Sorry. Were you expecting more than that?
No,
I'm just sitting here in my studio office. You know, just had a slow doctor's appointment this morning. Very annoying. That's all. That's all I got.
I am. We're at the early stages of a blizzard right now. It's been snowing for like an hour-ish here, maybe. So when we get done with that, I'm going to be at that stage of like, do I have time to get in the car and run to the grocery store to get a few things? You know what I mean?
Nah, sounds like a DoorDash kind of weekend.
Should I just ride it out? You know what I mean? I can also walk to the grocery store, you know, if that's what needs to be in the snow. So I'm not too worried about it, but going to be holed up here. It's 5 to 10 on the way is what I'm told. So, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this week. A pretty big episode of the challenge. It's a pretty significant episode of the challenge. And an equally insignificant episode of All Stars that we'll get to. And some culture stuff first. I got a couple of things I want to get off my chest.
Okay.
if we do.
Yeah, let's get right into it. But can I just, did you get a chance to check out Jacob Collier, the musician?
I did. Yes.
Let's do quick thoughts on that first.
All right. Well, that's not the thing I wanted to get off my chest.
I know it's not, but we're going to lose it if we don't just, I don't think it's much, right? I don't imagine we have a long conversation about this.
All right. Well, let's start with why Jacob Collier, and I don't mean that in I'm not questioning you. I'm just curious of why you picked this out of all the things.
Well, I didn't exactly do that. I someone mentioned it, and I think I told this story when I assigned you this. But someone
I think
mentioned
you did
it
too,
to
but
me.
I forgot already.
yeah. What I say is not that important. A caller on my radio show mentioned him in a bizarre context about, you know, someone who was well respected and popular in certain circles but not mainstream, a little too, you know, insider, right? Like an artist's artist, so to speak, was the context.
Gotcha.
In which he was brought up, and I watched some videos and I found it fascinating and entertaining, and I wondered if it was the sort of thing that would entertain you or make you furious.
Yeah, I'm just realizing I fucked up here, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now that we are having this conversation, you said watch the videos, and I didn't do that. I just listened to the music. That said,
wait. So hold on. Did you? All you did was listen to the studio albums.
Yeah, I just went on Spotify and listened to two records. I thought I was doing good, man.
Dude.
But now I'm realizing I totally did wrong.
We had an entire conversation about how the studio album wasn't really going to...
Like a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's on you, pal.
Yep, it is. That is on me. And it turns out, that your summation of that is correct. Because the studio albums feel like he's doing a little too much.
Uh-huh.
And
he might be for the studio.
Yeah. And I'm sort of wondering, like, you know, this does not seem like the kind of music that he would enjoy.
It's not really my kind of music. It's a little like,
yeah,
it's a little, I don't know how to describe it. It's a little like theater. It's whatever, it has like a theaterness to it, if you will. A bit of a musical theaterness even.
Yeah.
But it's the performance of it that I found interesting. So, all right, yeah. We'll call that a miss. Move right
something
on.
Something that just hit me as we're having that conversation. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember we talked about how he did stuff. Now, yeah, sure did. Sure did.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to blame my failures to properly do the homework on Get Back.
Okay. All right, let's get into it. So,
which,
you're, all
which
I know
taken over my life this week.
Right. All I know is you're very upset about something with regards to Get Back. I have a feeling I know where we're headed, but I'm a little, I don't know, I'm a little confused. So, I'm excited to hear what you're about to say.
Okay. So, I want to be clear, because when we talked about the run-up to Get Back, you know, I think it quickly became a conversation of, you know, oh, so you don't like the Beatles? You're not one of those Beatles haters, are you? And so I want to be clear that I'm not a Beatles hater. And in fact, if you were to ask me my favorite Beatles song, there's a pretty good chance I'd say I've Got a Feeling, which is featured pretty prominently throughout Get Back.
And it's such a good song. Oh.
Yeah. Great song. And I've got nothing against the Beatles music. I like the Beatles music. I like the particular record that we are watching being made. My criticism here is of the film Get Back. And my primary criticism is that this film is an achievement in that it has taken the world's, you know, you might even not need to say arguably. But we'll say arguably the world's greatest and most interesting rock and roll band, and make them dull and tedious. This is a fucking slog. A slog that I've not completed yet. I am 6 hours in now. And so when we talked about it during the week, I was like, I don't know that I can talk about Get Back yet. Because I had watched part one and was incensed at it. At just how dull and tedious it was to sit around and watch the Beatles argue while they hashed out a couple of great songs. But I did think that towards the end of part one, it really starts to pick up a little bit. And so I was like, okay, I get it. Maybe the beginning is tedious on purpose. And as the songs start to come together, and the show that they're planning starts to come together. I'd already heard kind of like Billy Preston arrives later and starts to make some magic. I thought, oh, okay. Like, as the show comes together, the film is going to come together and we're going to get something that's much better paced. But now I'm almost all the way through part two and that's not true. Like, maybe that happens in part three. I don't know. But part two is still mostly watching them dick around. Like, this is literally what we're doing. They're dicking around. And, like, I feel like if you think the Beatles between record skits are really great, like, this is your movie. Because you get lots of John doing impressions and goofing. And I guess if you find that really interesting, then, hey, man, good on you. But, you know, like, you know, if the hip hop term no skips applies, like, you could just call this movie Skips. It's a movie about the skips. And, like, I can't believe how unwatchable this is. Like, what the fuck are we doing? And my biggest complaint, you know, is this is a thing, right? This is a thing with certain directors of certain prominence. I'm talking about Peter Jackson and I'm talking about Scorsese and people of that ilk where they all just think, okay, I've got license to tell whatever story I want, whatever at whatever length I want. And I'm not going to make anything that isn't less than 3 hours. Like, I'm just not, because I don't have to do that. And like fucking constructed narrative, man. Like, half of this movie is the Beatles going, like, literally the people, the subjects of the movie are sitting there going, my God, this footage is just, for this documentary, is just shit. And they're right! It's so boring!
Okay, I'm going to stop you, because I think you've made your point.
Okay.
And I want to say this right, because I understand your point, and I'm not sure your point is incorrect. And now that you're saying all these things, I'm realizing I should have understood exactly what your reaction would be after watching it myself. I'm only a little farther than you, maybe halfway through part three. I can't tell you that the pacing changes significantly. But I guess here's what I would say, is that we have found something that is not for you, not because of the Beatles, but because of what this project, I'll call it, actually is. Because I think you have accurately, although certainly with the most negative connotations and attachments possible, you've accurately described the footage. I think calling this a film is to the detriment of the expectations set around it. Oh, who's a good girl? We're not a video podcast, but Derek's dog has entered the chat. Sorry. Anyway, you're not wrong. There's no narrative here. And I'm stealing this because Bill Simmons said it on his podcast about this. What this is not really a documentary.
You know what? I just real quick, I have a bone to pick with Bill Simmons because that's part of the reason why I watched this. Fuck you, Bill Simmons.
Okay, well, I think maybe you should have listened to him.
My life back.
I think maybe you should have listened to him more carefully, because one thing that he said that I think is dead on, that perfectly describes this, is it's not so much a documentary, and it's certainly not a film, because as you said, there's not even really an attempt to construct a narrative. What it is a living historical document that we never thought we would receive. So for someone who is fascinated by the relationships in the Beatles and by the dissolution of the Beatles, this is raw, essentially raw historical context for what happened in a now long lost time with people who, you know, two of whom arguably the most interesting and sort of the two guys who drove the dissolution of the band the most have now passed away and never really talked about it in a way that was honest and direct. So it's kind
okay,
of
can
a...
I think you're making a really good and interesting point that I would like to disagree with. Can I jump in here for a second? And that, and to say is like, yes, like this is a document of the breakup of the greatest band of all time, right? Like, and that is something that should be an interesting film, or if you don't want to call it a film, a documentary series or something. But what we got of that is a nothing.
I don't agree with that at all.
It's a big pile of, well, they had some conversations and here they are. Like, fucking edit this thing, man. You know, that's what, like construct a narrative here. Like, that is your job as the filmmaker, no? Like, I just don't understand it. Like, I heard Klosterman in, and I don't know, because Simmons has talked about this twice in this documentary that he called Iconic. Hopefully you can hear my sneering at this. Klosterman said it was the perfect length, and I'd never disagree with the statement more. Yeah, I get it. If you're trying to simulate the studio experience, which is exactly the tedious, interminable, sitting around and waiting, we're going to goof off a bunch, we're going to have some arguments, we're going to hash out a record. Like, yeah, I feel like if you're trying to simulate that process, I guess I get it. But you still have to make a movie. You still have to make a narrative. Otherwise, they should have just presented this as here's some interviews. You know, here's archival footage. That's not what we're watching. We're supposed to be watching a movie or a documentary or some kind of series. Like, tell me a fucking story. Like, Peter Jackson didn't do his job with this footage.
I just don't agree that it's not entertaining or interesting. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but
it's at times interesting. But
I find,
you know, I'm not
watching
saying interesting shit doesn't happen.
Well, see, I find watching the dynamic of them just being in the studio, I find that playing out to be super interesting.
And yeah, don't you think you could have captured that dynamic in one third of the time?
Maybe, but I think there'd be some things that are lost. I think the repetition, for instance, of the song Get Back, which you seem to be particularly frustrated with at the moment.
I don't mind. I can hear the song Get Back 27 times. That is my frustration at the sheer repetitiveness of this film experience.
Well, I think some of the repetitiveness is them rehearsing and repeating songs. And I think,
yeah, a movie about the evolution of the song Get Back would be awesome. But this is a movie about nothing. It's a dry presentation of some things that are happened, and then you're constructing the narrative on your own afterwards, which is just it's just lazy. I don't know how a 9-hour documentary can be lazy, but we've gotten there.
I'm not sure that the, you know, elegant story arc you're imagining it exists in this studio session, and I think that's kind of what we're getting to see. And I think that is in itself part of the reason for the dissolution of the band. I mean, I think that's what's funny is like everything you're describing is like more or less accurate. I appreciate seeing all of the stuff you're talking about.
You see Some Kind of Monster?
Which one's that?
So that's the Metallica documentary.
No, I did not see that.
Okay. So, I mean, I would argue that's a film. I think it's a little over 2 hours. It's long for a doc, but you know what I mean? It's not eight. Where that's essentially doing the same thing, right? Over a much, much longer period of time. But right, like you're getting into the relationships between the people in the band and the dissolution and the relationship between the band and the therapist that they hire and what it does to them, what it does to the recording process and all of that stuff. And somehow they managed to construct a much more cohesive narrative out of that than what I've seen through 7 hours of this. 6 hours of this. Sorry, I don't want to overcredit myself.
Well, listen, I don't know if maybe there is a way to bring this to a close that makes you more appreciative of the experience or not. I doubt it from the sound of it. I don't know. I for someone who loves this band and has always been interested in the music, to see it come together and to watch, just for instance, the way the whole room changes when Billy Preston enters it, you know? Like,
yeah,
I
like
found
that
fascinating.
Great. That's what I mean. I think there's a genuinely good movie in here. Somebody had bothered to make it. Which is the point that you were kind of, you know, going the opposite way from. I think that's what.
Well, what do you think that is then? I guess maybe I'm not totally understanding what you want distilled and what you find repetitive and what you find entertaining. Like
I think there is a much better way to distill the evolution of the songs on the one hand and the evolution of their relationships on the other, the evolution of their dissolution, I guess, would be maybe the way to put it. On the other,
well,
right?
But they, you know,
just,
they went and did a whole other album.
Of these conversations.
Well, like, see, I think the conversations you're looking for happened like months later off camera because
maybe
they went and did a whole other album after this, right? This is before they tape Abbey Road. Let It Be yeah. came out after Abbey Road, but it, this was a problematic time in the band, but after this, they came back together and made arguably their greatest album, despite the fact that their differences continued to spiral. So, like, I'm not sure the story you're looking for. I don't know. Like, again, to me, this exists as a relatively broad and, to your point, very long historical document of a band in a time that would that was formative in terms of ultimately leading to the dissolution or being a major stop on the road to dissolution. But
right. Well, then,
to me,
I feel like you can construct that.
I think
story
you could
in
but
a clearer way.
You could, but that story would be broader, it would be longer, right? And it would be more. You do have to do more specific storytelling before and more specific storytelling after the Get Back sessions in particular. And it would be, I think, while more to your liking, and definitely you could do it in 2 hours, 2.5 hours probably, and have a full documentary of the Beatles' dissolution, I'm not sure it would give you the same sense of sort of living in the studio with them. And, like, I found myself feeling like I was Heather McCartney. Nay Eastman, you know what I'm saying? Like sitting on the floor of the studio, just watching. And to me,
I found myself feeling like I was Yoko, also sitting there in the studio, wanting to read a book, and occasionally scream at the top of my lungs.
Well, I guess for me, like 6 to 8 hours was not even close to enough for me to get bored with just watching those guys be human beings in the studio. Like I just
yeah, it.
And
yeah,
I think, that, honestly, I think you're in the minority on this. Like, I don't
I'm definitely
think,
in the minority in it. That's why I'm so pissed off. Right?
Yeah, well, I just, I don't think very many people are so easily bored by a long look at what might be called boring studio moments with four of the most interesting and yes. studied men on Earth who you've never
seen this.
You've never really seen
question,
them.
Man. All right, so this gets to something fundamental that I wanted to ask you about. So if we were making this about, let's say, Styx, right? You know what I mean? Like, run-of-the-mill classic rock band, not great, not terrible, have some songs you would know. Like,
well, I mean, if the question is,
you,
does
would
this
you
film...
watch this?
No, probably not. If you're asking,
right.
does this film depend on my interest in John, Paul, George, and Ringo? Then of course it does. Yeah, it's the Beatles.
It's all stuff that, right? Yeah, but that's what I mean. That's all stuff that we're bringing to the movie. That's not actually in the text that we're watching, right? Like all of this depends on going, well, this was the biggest band on Earth, and there are so many people waiting to hear what comes out of this, and that every argument that these guys have, no matter how mundane, is sort of inherently interesting because it's the greatest band in the world having that. But, like, I don't think that doesn't make a movie. Right?
I don't think,
like,
watching
the movie is ultimately about who these people, right? Like, who these people are. And, like, mostly what we get is them dicking around and, like, reading newspaper clips and funny voices and shit. Like,
That's not interesting.
I disagree. What are we doing?
Right. I mean, I think I and again most people who have watched this disagree with you. Watching how they,
I guess so. I mean,
watching the human experience
like,
of someone like that, I think is interesting. I do because
yeah,
a Paul McCartney who you I've never seen his songwriting process, which you get to see.
Yes, you have. We just watched a show about it three weeks ago.
No, that really wasn't. I mean, that was him. That was him telling stories.
Yeah,
they were great stories.
These songs.
But
yeah.
It's not the. That's not the same thing. And again, I like this to me is akin to our sort of where our taste in music differs, in that, like, your interest is really only in the finished product.
It's not, though. I'm not arguing that watching them work it out, get back, or I Got a Feeling, again, a song I fucking love, is not interesting. It's just, that's like 10% of this.
I disagree. It's at least 50%. And the other 50% is them.
So much of this is jams and watching them dick around on shouts. And then literally just, hey, let's get Yoko in here to scream a few times. And I don't want to be dismissive of that, because I do think that this film is pretty redemptive of Yoko in a way that I kind of appreciate, at least to this point. So I'm not trying to make fun of her. But I just mean that, like, there's just so much fucking jerking off, you know? And I guess if it's like, well, we get to watch the world's greatest rock and roll band jerk off, then, like, yeah, okay, great. Like, cool, man. I guess, if that floats your boat. That doesn't mean,
see,
I'm not,
but what you're describing, no,
show me the fucking process, though.
I disagree.
Like, not all of it.
I disagree with that entirely. Like, first of all, jerking off, as you're describing it, is clearly part of the process. But also, the jerking off that you're describing, it's not just jerking off. That is the most reductive and insulting way to look at the, you know, somewhat understandably, like, you could call them mundane, right? Human interactions, but it's getting a real look into personal relationships that have sort of fascinated the world and led to endless speculation for the last 60 years or whatever it is.
Right. That's that's what I mean.
People are interested in that.
It's not even a movie about the mythology of the Beatles, right? But it's a movie that hinges on the mythology of the Beatles. So
again,
if you're into that, it is
what it is. It's a historical document of the Beatles. That's what it is, and I guess you're within your rights to be angry that it wasn't called a historical document of the Get Back sessions or like archived footage. Well, but I would rather see this. I would rather see this in this case, and I think that's most people. Most people would rather see.
Have 9 hours of this than three?
I do, because what you're talking about is the thing that you were desperately hoping this wouldn't be before we started it. You were saying, like, it's the most covered band in history. Why do I need another documentary about the Beatles? And you were right. And this is not that. It's something totally different. And I think it's something that, you know, again, the majority of people who watched it did really enjoy seeing. But it's not a documentary film about the Beatles.
No, it is not. It is not. It's not a film. I mean, look, yeah, you're right. Like, I guess back in the day, if you'd be like, hey, you want to come down to Abbey Road to watch the Beatles record? Like,
yeah.
I think I would do that. But I think I would walk away similarly bored from that experience in real life. And that's what we get, right?
Right. And I think you are in the drastic minority of people who would have walked away from that experience bored. Just wildly in the minority on that. I really do.
I guess so.
And maybe this is a little bit of you being jaded, like, you know, okay, it's some musicians in the studio being jerk-off musicians in the studio. I've seen that. But it's the Beatles, and I don't think most people have seen that at all, and no one has ever seen it with the Beatles, except the people literally standing on the screen in the documentary, like their family members and Glyn Johns. Like, it's a very small group of people who've been in that room.
Guess what? They're all bored. Everyone in this movie is really bored, right? You wouldn't deny that.
I would deny
document of them being bored.
I would deny that any of the
Ringo's asleep for half of it.
Ringo is bored, but that to me is also, as a drummer, like, I identify with the experience that Ringo is having, because when songs are being written by, you know, songwriters and you're the drummer who's not really a songwriter, that's the job. You're on call just sitting there waiting for them to be like, all right, just give us a little beat. Or alternatively, all right, I need you to do this here. And until then, you're just chilling. Like, that's Ringo's life. And it's fascinating to me, and this is what I wish we had spent the time talking about, is things like this. It's fascinating to me that while George is really allowed to be part of the songwriting process, although clearly there's a level
not
of
really.
Disrespect.
Really, but not really.
There's
yes.
a level of disrespect, but he is at least invited into the process. Ringo is never invited into the process unless he's doing one of his goofy numbers, and he's totally cool. Ringo is the chillest hang in the world, and also, like, in many ways, I think what allowed this thing to work as long as it did with the other strong personalities. And, you know, meanwhile, Paul and John are both obviously difficult in their own ways, and George is just, like, trying to get a word in edgewise, and you're sitting here watching him play these great songs with John and Paul being like, yeah, all right, I guess we can squeeze one of those in on the album. You know? Like, I find all this stuff fascinating. And I think there are so many little insights to be gleaned just from watching. But I don't think you're wrong that if you're looking to have a, you know, film about the Beatles, that's not exactly what you're getting.
Yeah.
It's only like, it's only if you're, I feel like if you're a completist, that's like, well, we've uncovered some new things that we have not covered, then I think great. But if that's not you, then man, 9 hours is a lot to invest.
Yeah, see, I just think
the Beatles is a lot to invest.
I think you are underestimating the audience for this, is all I'll say.
I'm not, because clearly it's quite popular, and somehow the majority of people seem to have watched it to the end, which I...
Right. Again, which is why
myself.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think you're right that this is only for completists. I think for some reason it's not for you, but
no.
I think people who are not completists are enjoying this in droves.
I would say that it just, you know, because of who they are, they have turned out the world's largest number of obsessives about the band, and that's why this is largely popular.
Maybe.
But Almost everyone who I've heard talk about it in gushing terms, I would consider to be a Beatles completist. So
I'm not sure I'm a Beatles completist. Yeah. I mean, I do really like the Beatles, like, but they're not my favorite or even a top like three favorite band, really. I hadn't listened to the album Let It Be in forever before this came out. To the point where I had forgotten how much I love songs like I've Got a Feeling or Dig a Pony. Like, these are some of my favorite Beatles songs. And again, that may have contributed to me finding this so interesting. Seeing the beginnings of some of the Abbey Road songs I found fascinating. In fact, that was what reminded me that, wait a second, they record a whole other album after this. I don't know. I just found all of the little things fascinating, and I think a lot of other people did too, and I think we've also gone way too deep on this because we're both saying the same things over and over again.
we are. So I'll move on from that, and I think we can kind of quickly talk about...
I'm glad you got your feelings out, though.
I did. I have a feeling.
You had some feelings to get off your chest.
I just don't... Yeah, all right. I got a feeling... Yeah. I think we could have done all the things you wanted in way, way, way less time.
Maybe.
And I will maintain that. Maybe. Like, edit your movements, people. Anyway.
I usually agree with you, so I'll stand with you on that point in general.
If you want, I can make up for how long we spent on Get Back. I feel like I can make that up with a one-word review of Harlem, if you want.
I might need like 7, but go ahead.
Hacky!
That's pretty good. I don't know if I can beat that.
Like, yeah. I get the pitch. Totally get the pitch.
I think I was right about the pitch, by the way. Was I not?
Yeah, you were. Look, I think this is a show that really wants to be spicy and just doesn't have the bread and chops to pull it off.
It could very easily be called Sex in the Harlem.
It's good.
That, I think, was going to be my review. I like Megan Good a lot. Not just because she's stunning, but as an actress, I think she's quite good. No pun intended.
Yeah.
But there's just nothing here for me. And I have no problem with there being something there for someone else. It's just not for me. It sounds like for you.
I mean, obviously there's some representation stuff here. Yeah. And I get that. If that's your bag. But if that is your bag, I do think you deserve a better version of Sex in the City than what we're getting here. You know,
maybe,
what I mean?
Although and I don't have a lot of respect for the original, so I don't necessarily I couldn't distinguish between the quality of the two other than that one came first. I will say this, you do deserve better shows. I think you have some, not enough, but some. But you also deserve mediocre shows with representation, so
sure.
I have no problem with
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, like, this, if this is your thing, like go on. But yeah. I don't know. I just see, you know, the aspiration, like, I feel like it really pick up and ran with, like, sort of the aspirational aspects of Sex in the City in a way that was just kind of like, I don't know. I'm not sure it took the right things. And I don't think that I'll be watching any more of them. So
how many did you get through? I watched two, and I feel like I get it. Okay.
Yep, I'm good. That's exactly where I'm at.
All right. Well, that was easy.
Yeah, see, I thought we could get through that one fast. What the hell was the other thing we were talking about?
Yeah, who can keep track anymore, quite honestly?
I gotta go to my notes. Here we go. Let's see.
Landscapers.
Landscapers. Yeah. I don't totally know if I know what Landscapers is yet.
I don't know if Landscapers.
One, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure they know what it is. It's extremely dark, clearly, but I think also maybe it's a comedy.
I feel like they know. There's a little bit of that. And I think it's like, hey, let's watch these two vamp for a while. And I'm good with that. Definitely good with that.
Right. So, I mean, I think we agree here, and this is another quickie, but, I think we probably need to wait a while. This is one we probably circle back on when it's over, to be quite honest with you. But certainly, David Thewlis and Olivia Colman are, what's the word? Compelling. They are tough to look away from.
Yes. I think I agree with you 100%. I do sort of feel like the people making this know what this is and where it's headed.
Yeah, they must, because it's too weird.
Confidence.
Yeah, it's too weird and, like, alternately giggly and dark to be not knowing where it's going. And, I mean,
right.
It's a true story.
And then we tell the fact-based story. Right, exactly.
Right.
So they, you know, they don't
and they told us the end point already, right? So
we know,
you know, logistically where we're heading. But boy, does it seem like we've got an interesting ride on the way there. And obviously it seems like this is something that, you know, different people have different stories about. So it'll be interesting to see how they tell, to the extent that they do, the story of what actually happened in the crime in question, because I don't think anyone in the world necessarily knows the exact truth.
Yes, right. It does seem to be somewhat indeterminate. So, so I would say, I didn't love this particular episode, but I'm intrigued, and I'm on board at least to check out some more.
I mean, I'll say this, right? If not for the just, you know, I'm kind of transfixed by Olivia Colman and David Thewlis and their relationship. Like, it would be hard to watch a lot of the scenes between them, which are just very dark and slow, if they weren't so particularly interesting people.
Right. Yeah. But they are.
They
so,
sure
so
are.
Words.
Yeah.
There's
like a, and it's crazy because they're playing this dynamic where it feels like an abusive relationship, but you almost can't tell which one of them is in control, if either of them is. And like, So you're, it's hard not to be interested in that, but the actual scenes that they're in together largely are like incredibly dark and slow moving.
Yeah. Can I? All right. I hate to drag this back into Get Back, but boy. I'm just curious. God, like,
I thought we got out of it.
I know. We're talking about Skulis and Coleman as these sort of like compelling presences, which I think we agree that they are. If you had been just sort of like dropped onto this planet yesterday and you watched Get Back, would you find the four members of this band compelling and transfixing? And I mean, I guess what I'm asking there is are the people that we're seeing on screen compelling and transfixing, or is it only compelling and transfixing because of what you know about them and the body of their work? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the latter more than the former. Paul is probably the most compelling character, you know, absent context, because some of the stuff he does musically is mind-blowing.
Right.
John is compelling because you know what a mind-blowing musician he is, but he's clearly wildly stoned for much of this. And the way he's approaching it from like a I don't really want to be in charge standpoint is really fascinating to me. The Yoko
stuff
is fascinating.
Yes, but that's dependent on context, isn't it? A little bit.
Yeah, it is. I'm not going to tell you. The interestingness of Get Back is definitely dependent on context. If that's your point,
it's contextual. Yes, okay.
I'm not disputing that at all.
Okay, great. All right, I thought we were in somewhat agreement on there. I just wanted to get to that. Okay. All right, let's get to the challenge. Should we do that? Because this is a landmark episode. I thought.
Those are strong words that I don't necessarily disagree with. Hit me.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, have we done this night of eliminations before? Is that new?
I feel like
it's new.
I don't think ever before. They have taken people in street clothes at the arena and said, JK, you might go into elimination right now, and then eliminated two people on the eve of the final. I do not think that has ever happened, and it was spectacular. I mean, talk about compelling. That's the TV we show up for.
I was happy that they brought clothes for the people who didn't have clothes.
Right.
Like, are they just going to make them compete in their street outfits? That seems rough. And I would also say, right, that would also make history in the sense that Emmanuel is now the first person to do two eliminations in one night. Is that right?
I think he must be, yeah.
That's something. Like, we've seen that on like Top Chef before, right? Where you just bounce
little...
from one elimination to another, but
it's a little bit different, yeah.
You see, yeah, it does hit a little different.
What did you think?
Loved it.
So, okay, let's talk about the night of eliminations. First of all, I didn't totally notice, because obviously this scene was in both episodes last week and this week, but just the looks on everyone's faces when TJ's like, JK, it's elimination time.
Yeah.
There were some priceless looks. Priceless. Amanda was the obvious woman to choose for the group, right? Because I think everyone up there is thinking, all right, I don't want to put in an ally, and I also don't want to put in someone who can kick my ass because maybe they're going to call me out, right? That's how you think about it. Amanda becomes the obvious choice because Nani has too many allies.
I agree with you, but I want to throw out a counter to that argument.
Go ahead.
So at this point, right, TJ has already disbanded the cells, correct? Right? He lined everybody up side by side.
Yes.
By the way, this is another part of the elimination that that I really loved too. It was like, all right, we're doing this. People are getting eliminated, and we are going to a vote right away. Right? Just the agony that immediate vote created.
No bargaining.
Fantastic television. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that. But at that point, they've disbanded the team, right? So
Correct. You
have some sense that this is an individual final.
Correct.
So my counter to that would be, would it not make sense to start thinking about people that you would want to compete against in a final, and therefore Amanda becomes a more attractive player to leave in the game at that point?
It would, if not for the element of getting called down after you vote someone in, right? I mean, yes. If, like, for instance, if I'm Casey, okay, I might think to myself, man, Emmy's been kind of nasty. She's real tough for a rookie. I'd like to get her out of here. But
right, and politically, you're probably going to be okay if you do that, right?
Right, but
you can always fall back on, hey, I'm just voting the rookie in.
But there's like a 50% chance that if you're the one that says her name, she calls you in, because who knows that she's crazy, right? Same thing, I don't know. So now Emmy might go in there and say, I want the weakest possible person, and then maybe it is Amanda. But I think the concern about just getting through the night takes precedence over the concern about who you'd like to go against in the final.
I guess so, right? Because everybody seemed to be mostly just, right? Everyone's reasoning was just like, I don't want to get picked.
If you're Nelson or Devin or Emmanuel, like, you really want to be the guy that says CT's name first and puts him on the block to go down there? And have him feel like you're the one that made him go down there, so he's calling you out. Like, nah, I don't want that.
But what if you're second?
Well, sure, but somebody has to pull the trigger first, right? And instead, people pulled the trigger on people they knew they could beat, or at least thought they could beat. Now, as far as guys go,
well, except Amanda, right? I mean, Amanda, right? The obvious choice for Amanda is Nani.
Yes,
she
even Nani.
That
yes,
yeah,
Nani yeah, said that.
Like, whoa.
And as soon as soon as they revealed what they're doing, you just see this huge smile come up on Tori's face.
Yeah, everybody went, oh.
Yeah, and they did their best to make the first one look competitive by showing the same shot of them wrestling like six times. But ultimately, this was as dominant as CT carrying bananas. She picked her up off the ground, carried her over, and deposited the ball in the container. It was an absolute beatdown.
Tackled.
Of course. Yeah. And the hip check on the second round was just like, like icing on the cake. And then she just ran over and like quickly dropped it in and ran back to Amanda and was like, are you okay? Nice try.
Yeah. You fought hard.
Yeah.
As said, that's my style, baby.
Yes. And Nelson nailed this one. You know, Nelson so rarely nails things in an ITM, but he was like, Amanda, you got to put that petty revenge shit to the side, or you end up calling out someone like Tori in a physical elimination. You can't do it. Should have been Nani.
Except
you had a real shot against Nani.
In that, Amanda tried to suss out. She did her best to try to suss out what the event was going to be. Like, you don't know, right? Like, it could have been puzzles. And then it's like, well, then it's stupid, right? You know what I mean? Who knows? So,
honestly,
I mean, there was a puzzle elimination that night. Could have easily gone to the other sex. You know what I mean?
Well, but there was, she didn't have anything to suss out, right? Because it was still, it was the previous elimination that was sitting there when they made the decision. So,
right. She didn't know. That's what I mean. Know. Like, she's
well,
like,
but that's why Tori's a bad decision. Because it's not like, sure, Tori's not good at puzzles, but it's not like Nani is a puzzle expert.
It's sort of a moot point because Amanda also knows that Nani was the person that she should have picked, and she just said, like, I wasn't going to pick my friend.
Yeah, but they're not really friends, are they?
Like, I mean, in her mind, I guess they were.
Nani was like, thought she was going to pick me. Huh, okay. Not like, oh, my friend had my back. Like, they're not friends. Amanda's weird. But either way, she wasn't ready for a final, so it doesn't matter.
Right. But it's like, I mean, because everybody said the same thing about Emmanuel. And it's like, Devin's a reasonable pick. He just got the wrong event. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know? Like, I guess it's a mistake, but it's only a mistake in hindsight.
No, I don't. See, that's, yeah, I disagree with you. I think where Nani should have been the choice and Tori was a clear mistake. Honestly, if you were going to pick someone besides Nani, you should have picked Emmy. Like, yeah, she's stronger than you, but she's not as experienced as Tori, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, Emmanuel made as good a decision. You know, like, he could have picked Nelson. It's probably six of one, half dozen of the other between Devin and Nelson in terms of how many events he wins at. But if he picks Nelson and it ends up being a hall brawl, he looks just as bad. So to me...
That's what, like, I'm saying. Right. He made his mistake is only in high.
No, that's my point. Like, I'm with you on Emmanuel, but I think it's different than Amanda. Like, Amanda made a bad choice. Emmanuel, you know, picked one side of a pretty even gamble and just triple puzzle was the worst break he could have gotten.
Yeah, just got snake eyed.
Yeah.
Just got snake eyed.
And he even held his own for a puzzle and a half, you know? But he couldn't do math, so that hurt him. And he also acknowledged, like, I couldn't do very easy math. The best line throughout that was after it happened. Emmy was, like, talking about, oh, I love Emmanuel, and she just goes,
his dreams got crushed.
His dreams got destroyed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Just so matter-of-factly.
So matter-of-fact. That actually reminds me, like, I don't even think I heard a single burn, never mind have a burn of the week. Like, this episode was not conducive to burning. Right? It was
best,
very sincere, I felt like.
You're very right, but Devin did say one thing about Emmy, that it wasn't exactly a burn, but it was the closest thing I could get. when she got into the final and she went crazy, as she does, and God, I love her. Devin in the ITM, just like, you know, it's an incredible season by Emmy. 4 missions, 4 eliminations, and 12 meltdowns.
Meltdowns, yep. Yeah. All right. All of those were correct.
And they were all lovable.
I think even the numbers are right.
Yeah, so it's not like, it's not really a burn because she's so lovable, but it was as close as I could get. Boy, when they started the final, oh, wait, before we get to that, the whole reaction to Tori and, like, not knowing how to handle an elimination between two people she really likes, like, I thought that was a little over the top.
I had that down as really another in a long series of Nelson wild overreactions, to be honest.
Yeah.
By the way, if there was one mistake Emmanuel made, and I think ultimately why I'm not mattering, it was not saying Nelson's name once Nelson's name had already been said.
Yep.
What are you doing, dude? Like, why would you pick anybody else?
No, well, he clearly didn't. I don't know how survivor voting works, but he clearly didn't understand that aspect of it. That, like, he didn't want to pick. I don't know. Like, I understand his thought process, but, like, you just got to go for the name to try to get more votes than you're going to get, bro. And if he had said Nelson,
that's your best shot.
Yeah, maybe someone else says Nelson. I don't know. It's a tough one.
I don't think it would have mattered. I think ultimately the vets were going to side with the vets. But that's the only, you got to give yourself a chance, right? Like, that was crazy.
I bet he learned that. By the way, in addition to the wild overreaction, Nelson had an incredible moment where he was just sitting in an ice bath. Did you catch that?
Yeah, sure did. Sure did. Talking to his legs, I think, at one point, right?
Yes. and then Tori came in and had to, like, wait for him to finish talking to his legs. It was an incredible moment.
Yeah. And look, I think what tells you that this was a wild over, like, freak out, essentially, is that everybody pretty much let it go without, you know, like, the Tori Nelson conversation was the closest thing to a detente, you know what I mean? That you got for the rest of the episode. But both her and Devin, like, put it aside pretty quickly once that final got going. Which I think tells you. Because Tori's right. Like, Nelson said her name first. Like, what I don't understand what grounds he's got to be mad about her saying his name. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, he's being ridiculous again. And he's saying typical Tori as if that's a thing. Like, anyone knows what he's talking about.
Right. He's talking about her not being loyal, I guess.
I guess that was his
point.
Yeah, but no one has ever said that before. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. It all seems
like if you were like typical Kyle, like... right? We'd all know what you were talking about. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Typical exactly. Devin I mean, is a thing. Like, there's no typical Tory. That's not even a thing.
No. I mean, I guess you could make the case that Devin has been had questions about Tory's loyalty since the Sapphire cell got broken up, right? But
yeah, I guess. Cell, but, like, this is her rooting for a dude that she's literally sleeping with. Like, it's not that weird.
Yeah, right. That was the part that got me. And I think Nelson was pretty dismissive of that, right? Like, I called him her cuddle buddy or whatever, right?
Right.
But, like, yeah.
Like, you he know, didn't have a know. Thing with Berna where he was cheering for her earlier in the season. Like, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, totally. You know what? Like I said, it's all forgotten as it should be once it's time to get down to business. You know what I mean?
Amen.
So I was gloating, you know, to myself when they split these people up as individuals, going, see, I told you. But then, of course, they get set back into teams eventually. So.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, that's really all that happens here, right? And the purple team is stacked, man. Like, I think we might have another...
Sure does seem like it.
Another Emerald situation. Because I was thinking, like, how would I rank favorites? And, like, certainly purple has two of the three best competitors, in my view... you know, on both the men's and women's side.
All right. Well, let's just put that aside for a second, and should we just rank them? Rank men and women favorites?
Well, okay. I think it's tricky, right? So Nani's clearly at the bottom. No?
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
I also think we probably have to put Casey at the top.
I think we do. The only doubt I would have about that is just that she's currently in eighth place. You know what I mean? But,
right.
But I think
so.
Like that.
You know,
I'm still backing her first from the girls.
Right, which means numbers 2 and 3 are on purple, right? Which is not like an
Correct.
End of the world advantage, but I think the gap between Tori and Emmy and Nani is bigger than the gap between Tori and Emmy and Casey, right?
Yeah, and then right. So guys are going CT Devin, and then Kyla Nelson in some order. I'm guessing.
Well, I think it with guys, it's pretty clear CT is the favorite, right? And I think you could argue
CT's the favorite by a distance. I think
exactly, and you could argue Devin is too. And I say
because I have Devin too.
Yeah, and I say that in large part because of those three guys: Devin, Kyle, and Nelson. Devin, I think, has the fewest weaknesses at this point in his career.
Yeah. I think I have Nelson 3 because feel like we are past the puzzles. Right? So
maybe,
like,
but you never know
for this final.
But you never know,
sure,
right?
You don't know.
And that's where, like, I feel like, yeah, probably Nelson is the best physically by a slight edge over Kyle and a little bigger over Devin, but really the gap in like overall intelligence and strategy is much bigger with Devin on top. So that's why I'll take him number 2.
Yeah. Right. And that's why they're the formidable team. By the way, I thought it was an interesting moment, right, where Kyle finished his puzzle, you know, a few minutes before Nelson, maybe, I don't know, 30, 45 seconds or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then you see Nelson try to make up the gap by sprinting.
Yep.
Which I thought was something that was interesting. It said something interesting about both of them. You know what
it
I mean?
Sure does. It sure does.
I mean, if you think about it, right, it's classic Nelson, right, in that all heart and effort and really trying to emphasize his physicality while not thinking for a second that he's really gaining nothing.
Right.
From his pursuit, right? Like, there's no real difference between finishing 5th or 6th. You're going to be on the same team regardless.
Right.
You know what
now,
I mean?
Well, but now I will say, he might get...
Feudally extended.
He might get, like, a couple extra seconds out of that, you know? Because if they're, like, keeping time between checkpoints or something to ultimately decide the winner, maybe. But it's probably... you know, a lot of effort for relatively little to no gain. And that does...
Yeah. Well,
like, Nelson, it's not that he's always getting no gain, but he's like a effort for effort's sake type of guy.
He sure is. And not necessarily strategically applying that effort. And you see, like, CT is very much LeBron in this final, right? You've even heard him say a couple of times, like slow down, dude. Like, we're doing this for 2 days.
Yep, don't gas yourself out.
Yeah, like you know, CT is picking his spots, and obviously to great effect. And while we're talking about to great effect, I gotta say, as unimpressive as Devin's elimination puzzle performance was, the final puzzle performance was just that impressive, right?
CT mentioned it. Like, oh, there's Devin, the puzzle genius. Yeah. There he is.
Yeah, like, he left. I mean, CT is really good at puzzles. Left everybody in the dust on that one. And yeah, that was impressive. I obviously I'm backing CT to win this thing. I think you have to.
Yep,
but Devin's got a shot, man.
He is as ready as he's ever been. Two other things to mention before we move to the what did you say? The equally irrelevant episode of All Stars.
Yeah.
the scenes from coming up on. There's an elimination coming. Someone's about to get eliminated.
Yeah, that I mean that generally happens, right? They usually wind up with three pairs. They go from four to three at some point or in the final.
Yep,
typically,
but
I feel like so that's not a surprise to me.
But they're in teams right now, so does that mean two people from one team? Like, is the losing team going to face off with itself in order to determine who's
eliminated?
That was the sense
I got from what TJ was saying in this episode about how you don't want to be on the losing team.
Yeah,
right?
So here's the thing. On one hand, if it plays out how you think, Nani, for sure, is in a lot of trouble, and she's going to have to play against her girlfriend. And
yeah.
Kyle and Nelson could really be a headbanger. So that could be fun. On the other hand, if somehow the orange cell pulls an upset, you're taking out two, like, favorite-level competitors from the game, which is fascinating. And all of a sudden, the door to A, Nani winning, but B, both Kyle and Nelson suddenly are in much better position, no matter who gets eliminated.
Yeah. And look, and I, you know, as we just went through, I think Purple has a real advantage, but not such an advantage that Orange couldn't win a challenge.
I mean, you never know, right? It all depends what the challenge is. There's a million variables.
Yeah, certainly. So that'll be interesting to see. I feel like a Nani-Casey matchup could have some Serena versus Venus tennis match vibes.
I guess, but can you? I can't imagine Casey losing. Can you?
I can't imagine Casey losing if everybody's trying their hardest. You know what I mean? But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't imagine Casey losing if emotions get in the way for her somehow. So,
man, I just can't see it, even that.
There was a little canoodling moment, right, between the two of them where Nani goes, you know, I'm going to cross in front of you. And I remember thinking, like, I wonder what Casey's like inner monologue was when she made that joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I would bet her inner monologue is like, yeah, right.
Yeah, I think her inner monologue is probably, you're so cute.
Yeah, you're cute. I will destroy you.
Right.
So, that's my guess, but I don't know. So I hope it plays out the way I'm fascinated to see. All right, let's move on to All Stars, which was late.
I mean, look,
which was the Harlem of.
I have some notes.
I have some notes. Go ahead.
The quitting, man. We gotta stop. We gotta stop it. We have to stop. You can't like.
Yeah, there's been a little too much of that.
Team is
too good.
Well, let's start with Casey, who got absolutely bailed out by Melinda taking a brutal fall.
Yeah.
I don't come, man. She even said it in an ITM. I didn't finish the challenge because I'm an asshole. That's right.
Yes.
Just don't come. You don't have to do this. No one has a gun to your head. Don't go to the challenge if you don't want to be challenged. I'm sorry. It's just bad television.
I had that quote in my notes, actually. I didn't finish the challenge today because I'm an asshole. And it's like, yep.
Yeah, you're an asshole. Like, the best line of the show was TJ saying, "You hear that airplane? That's the one you're on next." And I wish he had been right.
I thought that was the second best line of the show. The first best line of the show was my burn of the week, if you're ready for that now.
Hit me with it.
And that would be, take your ass back to Hawaii on Broken Spirit Airlines.
Broken Spirit Airlines. Aloha means hello and goodbye.
Come on. Yeah.
Tech
had a couple good lines. I believe, did Tech also say, "You done fucked up, bro? You done fucked up?" Because I think that was also pretty good.
He did, and he also admitted, like, he got tripped up on some fifth grade math.
Yeah.
Because he did well in the physical part of that challenge, and then he just got stuck spinning the math, being like, "Is it this one? Is it this one?" No, you idiot. And Darrell was like, Tech wasn't lying. He really can't divide. A few quick notes that I just want to throw in here. That daily challenge looked so much fun. So much fun. Yeah.
Well, except if you missed the thing.
If you blew it.
Kind of nakedly falling into the water.
I'm not saying it was easy, by the way.
Did look fun for Jasmine. I'll put it that way. Did not look fun for Jasmine.
No, but shout out to Jasmine for actually having a tough time and fighting through it and getting it done. Screw Casey. Go home, Casey.
Yeah. A
couple other random notes. I was shocked. They did not vote Casey in, and they voted Tina in. And as far as Tina goes, some classic Tina tantrums in this episode. But as far as Tina goes, I get it. Like, I get what you're saying. I don't like myself when I get all nasty. I hear you. But again, we got to figure that out before we come to the challenge. This is not this is not therapy.
All right. Let me ask you.
If you're here...
What if she threw the challenge with grace? Like, what if she went out there and competed, you know, at 70% speed? You know what I mean? And, right? Like, the objectionable thing was that she just went out there and, like, stood there, right? I'm not competing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she could have, right? Like, she could have just gone through the motions a little bit.
If she did
it,
first of all, she could have done that and no one would have really known. Second of all, she could have gone 100%, and if she was about to win, then put the thing down and said, "Listen, I don't like who I am in this house, so I'm going to bow out and let Melinda keep my spot." That would have been fine. But to just stand there, again, it's a TV show. It's bad TV. If that's what you're going to do, don't come. You don't have to come. It's fine. I enjoyed that you came, but if you had told me I'm going to sit out the elimination when I get thrown down there because I can't stop throwing temper tantrums, I'd have said, stay home.
Yep, I agree. Look, casting has been issued so far, I feel like, for All-Stars. Like,
I will say this.
They really...
quickly, because I think this is so far what I've figured out. What this show is about, really, this is what distinguishes it from the challenge most, is they're doing the challenge stuff and that's all great and it is entertaining, and again, the daily was great in this episode. This is a show about adults being like undeniably and inexorably pulled back into youthful, childish behaviors and trying to reckon with who they are and how they've changed and how they can be better versions of themselves. And it's really an emotional show about that more than it's a show about the competition.
Right. which is fine. It's just a little less watchable, isn't it?
Right? It's so, less exciting, certainly. Oh, it's less exciting. It's less. Yeah. It's less appointment television, and there's certainly less to say about it on a weekly basis because the competition is less intense. Now, I don't know that the competition may not become more intense because we're as people quit, we're left with the more intense people, and certainly. Yeah.
Although
Ayana,
we're also kind of like, I think people are, we're going about getting, trying to get rid of some of the intense people too, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Ayana's not going anywhere.
Like, Jody's going to be a target again. Derek is already gone.
Yeah,
Ayana will be a target again at some point.
But Ayana and Jody are tough. Like, I don't know that they're going anywhere. And like, most of the guys at this point are reasonably serious. So, I think we're getting down to it. And... you know, there are some entertaining things on this show. For instance, Nehemiah is just the weirdest dude. He makes every single thing so weird, and it's something to watch. I don't know quite how.
And it's completely sincere.
100%
like, you never get a sense that's a put on. He's just being him.
He's
you
so bizarre.
Yeah.
Brad is also a very weird man, but I think people are sleeping on his level of experience in this game. Like,
Brad
knows what he's doing.
Brad has some wisdom, too.
Yes.
It's not just beard.
Yes, he does. He has some challenge wisdom, and he's such a, like, the way he talks is so stilted and bizarre that I think people just assume there's nothing going on upstairs sometimes, but he's savvier than people seem to be realizing. Ayana with the temper tantrum, like, this is why I'm saying it's going to continue to get more intense. It's like, that was hilariously ridiculous. She must realize at some level that this is the exact same thing that happened to Jody the previous week, right? That she's throwing a temper tantrum over, how dare you force, I earned my life shield. How dare you force me to use it? Like, lady, this is the game. We just, how do you not understand that this is what we do now? This is how this works.
Right. And it literally wasn't even about you, other than that you would prevent us from doing the thing that we wanted to do.
That's right. If anything, it's a compliment,
that, right?
Right. If anything, it's like it's an acknowledgement of your success. Calm down.
Yes.
And I gotta say, like, Tech in the elimination, asking for the smoke from a guy who's much bigger than him, was an impressive moment to me. Now I can't really believe that he ended up winning that after the hit he took on the comeback. But he invited a physical confrontation with a man who outweighed him by at least 40 pounds. And I'll give him credit for that. He laid the wood on Steve the first time. The first time, he absolutely delivered. And he had to know that that was going to come back on him. He had to know.
Yeah. Good for him.
He was rattled on that second hit. But he hung in there, man, and he got the win.
What do you think about the strategery of the broke down palace? Announcing their intentions to everyone.
It's not smart. I mean, and that's what I mean about Brad. Like, he called it in the ITM at the end of the episode. Like, he's like, I don't think I've ever really seen an alliance go so public so early, but okay. Like, now we know.
Like, without, like, I guess you could do that if you have, like, half the game's numbers or something like that, right? But, like, they don't. They're, like,
no, there's five
people.
Of them.
Four
yeah.
now. Yeah. They're really only four to begin with, right? Because one member of the alliance was clearly loose.
Uh-huh. That's true.
Steve seems like a decent dude, but, like, what have you been doing all season, man? It's like
come on,
two
guy.
Or three times where you stepped in it with your own friends.
I feel like you need
for
the
reasons that are unclear.
You need the Lebatard, he doesn't get the show meme, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get the show.
Just a big close up with Steve's eyes.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Yep.
I love it. Yeah,
because honestly, he's lucky he didn't end up here beforehand from the way he handled the whole Derek situation. He came in seemingly thinking like, I'll just be me. No strategy needed.
No strategy, no relationships, no problems.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Meet some new people.
That is, he's playing the game like I thought Emmanuel would play it at the beginning of this season. If that makes sense.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Steve. Hate to see you go. All right. Yeah. Look, this is not an episode or a season I think that's going to deserve a lot of heavy scrutiny, but it's still a good watch. It's good to check in on.
It's fun. We'll see what happens.
It'll do once the real thing ends in a couple of weeks, right?
That's right. That's right. Soon it's all we have.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm good there. All right. So homework for this week is we're just going to try to do a year in review show, right? Like our favorite things for 2021?
Yeah, we're both going to make a list of our favorite things from the year. Movies, TV, music, whatever pop culture ephemera we appreciated, we're going to try to compile into a list and, we'll see what people think. And then we're going to take the rest of the year off, goddammit.
Yeah, exactly, because we deserve it.
I don't know if I deserve it, but I'm doing it.
Year-end. Some year-end music list, so maybe I'll share some of those when we do that.
Great. I feel like I was less connected to new music this year than ever before. I'm a little disappointed in myself. I don't know if it's pandemic related or what.
I mean, yes, it is. Also, having a baby and stuff.
Yeah, man, the fucking baby. All right. Anyway, I guess we're done. I gotta go deal with a baby, probably.
Okay.
All right, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.